Deep in the farthest recesses of the most distant jungle lies a city. A city populated by the most mysterious, terrifying, and downright grotesque denizens ever seen by mortal eye. Here, in the darkened corners of this cavernous locale, sits an ordinary, average brick building with an innocuous, ordinary, average blinking neon sign which reads, On Air. It is here where each week, Seth Breedlove and Mark Matzke convene to discuss the greatest mysteries the world has ever known. Now, strap on your hiking boots, grab your trusty walking stick, and don't forget the bug spray as we begin our journey through Monsteropolis.
This is Monsteropolis, a show about monsters, legends, and anomalies. I'm one of your hosts. My name is Seth Breedlove. I'm joined tonight by my friend and my friend and co-host Mark Matzke.
Happy New Year, everybody.
Happy
and
New
to
Year,
you, Mr.
Yeah.
Seth.
Yeah.
My friend.
Friend. 2019 Small Town Monsters presents Monsteropolis heads into 2019. Which will be our first full year on the airwaves. 97.1 Wadsworth Community Radio. If you're in the Medina County / Summit County area and you want to listen to the show, that's where you can do it. You can listen to it. It's not live. As of right now, the show is not broadcast live. We have talked before about, and we did an episode when we first started out that was broadcast live on Facebook, but I cannot picture people wanting to sit and watch this for 3 hours, so I haven't done it since. But maybe sometime we'll bring that back, or occasionally we'll bring it back or something. But this week's episode, so we're continuing with the holiday-themed shows by talking about a man named Indrid Cold, who was supposedly a space alien from another planet. And this is full disclosure. This is the episode I've done the least amount of research on, but I do consider myself an authority on. No, I do consider myself somewhat educated on the Indrid Cold story, having interviewed Tanya Derenberger about 2 years ago.
Yeah, I mean that's pretty up close and personal to the story. I think
she's in Parkersburg now. Tanya.
Okay.
So she was only like 35 minutes from here. That's one of the reasons I was able to drive up and interview her. But she, Tanya, we're talking about Tanya Derenberger. Woodrow Derenberger was the first sort of well-known person to have some sort of encounter with Indrid Cold. Do you want to introduce the story of Indrid Cold for listeners?
Yeah. Yep. The Indrid Cold, we are introduced to this character, this figure, in John Alvakeel's very landmark, groundbreaking book, The Mothman Prophecies, which was really interesting to me going back through this book again, getting ready for this episode, to realize how very little Mothman is actually in that book.
I was just going to say, this is one of the many stories in Mothman Prophecies that has nothing to do with Mothman.
Yeah, exactly. And it's, I didn't really study it this way, but it seems to me that it's almost he like parsed out the stories very carefully, and there's as much UFO and occupant and ancient stuff as there is Mothman. I mean, even Mothman's probably the less.
That's probably
of
the
all
less.
Of it.
Yeah, I think it is.
So as part of that, you know, this extreme high strangeness time and place was the late 60s in West Virginia. Point Pleasant is what we often concentrate on in terms of Mothman sightings and, of course, the Silver Bridge disaster. But we are introduced to Indrid Cold on I-77, not far from Parkersburg, West Virginia.
It's right between Parkersburg and Mineral Wells.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, he lived in Mineral Wells and worked out of Parkersburg, I believe. So he was heading home on November 2nd.
Did he sell washing machines? Yeah. Is that what it was?
Yep. He was a salesman for an appliance company. Mm-hmm. So he was driving home in a panel truck, November 2nd, 1966, and something fell over in the truck, and it caused him to sort of slow down, check it out, see what had happened. As that was taking place, a vehicle passed him, you know, a car passed him, and then another vehicle was close behind that he described as an old-fashioned kerosene lamp chimney, charcoal gray in color. So I assume that means it was tapered on the ends and sort of round, like globe-shaped in the middle.
And that's not the only... He's not the only person to describe that mm-hmm. same design to the ship.
From that night? Or from
just in UFO
general?
Lore, I right. know of others.
Right. Because that was the cool thing, too, I was reminded, is that there were independent witnesses that night who at the very least saw a figure talking to a guy in a panel truck by the side of the expressway.
And there's a UFO archive in Switzerland that has apparently a massive archive of UFO documentation, documents, witness descriptions, things like that. And there's a file in that archive relating directly to injured cult that has multiple witnesses that that have said that.
Wow. Yeah. So this vehicle passes him. I assume that means at car level, because it then turns crossways in the middle of the road, effectively blocking the road. Derenberger has to slam on the brakes to avoid hitting it, which he does, avoid it. Mm-hmm. A door slides open in this strange object, and a man steps out. And as the man approaches, he appears to be about 5'10", with long black hair combed straight back on his head. His skin is described as heavily tanned.
Heavenly tan.
Heavenly. It's a heavenly tan.
Sort of a heavenly tan. It's the type of tan we all aspire to have.
And, well, then it makes perfect sense that he would be grinning broadly, sporting his heavenly tan yeah. as he was. Yeah. He was wearing a dark top coat, and underneath, Derenberger reported seeing a glistening green material that was had sort of a metallic look to it. Mm-hmm. Then at once, he started receiving words in a telepathic fashion. Derenberger said he did not, the figure did not speak to him orally, that he felt the words were just coming into his mind. And the object that the figure arrived in rose up into the air and floated there while this conversation, this mental conversation, took place. And Cold said some things to him, introduced himself as the name of Cold, and spoke about some fairly mundane things, fairly odd type things to talk about, you know, referring to the town, the lights of the town in the distance, and that they have those type of things where he comes from, but they go by a different name. And finally, Cold told Derenberger to report this encounter and that at a later time he would come forward to confirm it. And then the vehicle came down, Cold got back into it, and it ascended and flew off. Derenberger went home, was very shaken by his experience. His wife urged him to report it, which he did to the Parkersburg Police Department. And the next day, he was questioned about this experience at length. The story hit the local press, radio, and television. And when it did, people, like I said before, came forward to report that they had seen a figure talking to a man in a panel truck by the side of I-77. And within a matter of days, no more than a couple weeks, Woodrow Derenberger became a celebrity of a certain type, very well known at the very least in his region.
Yeah, and that's really only the beginning of the story, mm-hmm. as we've come to find out since then. The encounters sort of intensified and would continue up until the time of Woodrow's death. And even at the funeral, Tanya insists that Indrid Cold was present. There's stories she told me that were not in the Case Files episode that we went into, or that we put out. But she, you know, like Tanya claimed that Woodrow and his, or that Indrid Cold and his family came for dinner in their house. That there were frequent sightings of, and I believe Keel backs this part up, that there were sightings of ships or lights in the sky near the Derenberger home. Am I wrong in remembering that? I swear there's a story about Keel.
No, there, that happened frequently, mm-hmm. and it turned into sort of your stereotypical people coming to their house and, you know, unbidden, yeah. sitting there waiting for the UFOs to descend. Not that they did visibly like that, but people, the sort of the posse idea that we always talk
yeah,
about.
Yeah, that's the place where people would come to have yeah. an encounter with a UFO, was the Derenberger home. And that one incident kicked off a lifetime of contact with some sort of person purporting to be an alien from another planet. Now, you know, like Tanya is very insistent that Indrid Cold did not have the spooky, creepy grin. He just was like, you know, like she saw him as a normal sort of man. Young, always appeared young, even though she met him when her dad, she met him in the 60s. That was the first time she met Indrid Cold, and she saw him at her dad's funeral, which I believe was in the 90s. And he still looked the same age. And she's insistent that the lanulotions or whatever don't age at the same rate that we do, and that he had, you know, he was aging, but it wasn't with the same, I guess, rapid aging that us mere mortals have. But this story has always been, I mean, it's one of the reasons it was the first Case Files episode and I jumped at the chance to interview her. This has always been one of my favorite stories because I really see it as a tragedy more than anything. And I don't know, not that I love tragedy, I just think it's such a fascinating thing. I don't know what Indrid Cold was. I don't know. I believe there was someone purporting to be Indrid Cold. I don't know if Indrid Cold, I don't know what he was. I have theories about what he was that I probably shouldn't get into on a show that's on the radio. But the fact was that there was someone that Woody, I'm just going to call him Woody because that's what everyone else called him. There was someone that Woody met on 77 that night and who he continued to have interaction with at least for a while after that. And every single member of that family, you know, sort of backs up the fact that there was this man that they called Indrid Cold who was there. Some of the kids disagree with Tanya that it was a man from Lanulus, and they do believe that their dad had gone kind of lost his mind and kind of went down the rabbit hole. His wife believed him, you know, up to a point. His wife eventually left Woody in the 70s and actually moved up here to Cleveland. She met a man who ran like a UFO contact group in Cleveland and ended up married to him, I believe is how it went until the time of her death. And Woody's entire family sort of fell apart. I know he became a fairly heavy drinker and had little to no contact with his kids for the latter half of his life. And a lot of that had to do with the fact that he was disappearing for months at a time. It wasn't like, claiming that he was going to Lanulus with Indrid Cold, where he was learning about the people and their alien ways. And he would come back 2-3 months later, 30-40 days at a time, he'd be gone. So after a while, that took a toll on the family, and the family falls apart. But I do think eventually in his life, he did sort of calm down again. He remarried, if I'm not mistaken, and his, you know, like he seemed to at least regain some semblance of a normal life. But that was much later in life, and his, you know, it wasn't without a toll on his family.
Yeah, and that's, I agree with you, that's the compelling sort of sadness to this, this whole thing.
Yeah.
And the details of this story are just really crazy. But as I say that, I mean, they're also mundane enough to make you really wonder about what the heck was happening.
Yeah, there was some aspect of Tanya's story about them having dinner at the, Indra Cold and his family having dinner at the house where they only wanted to eat potatoes, like French fries or mashed potatoes. I forget what she told me, but it was such a bizarre detail to remember or to recount. But that's the type of thing that comes up repeatedly in this story. And there's two perceptions of, as with almost all of these legends or paranormal events, there's two perceptions of what happened. There's the sort of like, actually, I mean, like it appeared in our Mothman of Point Pleasant movie. Like there's this horror story version of what happened where Woody's driving home from work and he meets a man on a dark road who comes out with this incredibly unnerving, creepy grin drawn by Matt Harris.
Yeah.
And it's terrifying and scary. And that is not necessarily what Woody said happened. And it's not necessarily the way that Woody's family saw what happened after that. It, you know, like he did claim that he was going on trips to Lanulos, and I'm sitting here with the book. It's called Visitors from Lanulos, and the whole thing is about his constant interaction with Indra Cold and going to another planet and all of that. But that's his recounting of things. And the most fascinating part of this, besides the family, the familial aspect and the family life, the hit that took, is that is trying to figure out what was actually going on here. Like, or was it like really an alien from Lanulos that was coming down and taking Woody with him back to Lanulos? Like, I have theories about what happened. None of them really jive with the fact that there was this spooky man. I don't believe that Indra Cold is the character that's sort of become the mythologized, is that a word?
Sure.
The mythological
version
of Indra Cold that we think of today.
Some of the stuff from Kiel that I wanted to bring up that I just really stood out was, you know, he recounts this time where there were tons of people at the farm, you know, looking to the skies and waiting for something to come down. And a black Volkswagen pulls up. Indra Cold gets out, and he knew that Woody was not feeling well, that he had a stomach ailment. And he gives him this vial and tells him to take it like it's medicine of some type. And Woody does, and he's healed. He feels a lot better. But I just love the juxtaposition of that. Like, everybody's looking up, and here's this extremely odd person rolling up in a black Volkswagen, getting out and giving him this miracle cure, and then sort of disappearing without anybody really, except Woody, recognizing anything was going on, if anything was going on.
Well, and I've always seen a lot of similarities between Indra Cold and the Men in Black, because the Men in Black, obviously, this case is tied to this case is tied to the Mothman case solely by geography. There doesn't really seem to be a connection between the Indra Cold story and Mothman, other than the fact that West Virginia was a really weird place in 1966 and 1967, and is still a really weird place today. And we need to do a whole month's worth of episodes about West Virginia and its weirdness, because you've got the Grafton. I mean, leave out the Mothman story, and you've still got the Grafton monster and the Flatwoods monster and the UFO wave and the Silver Bridge collapse and all this stuff that is very bizarre that has gone on in West Virginia over the years. But there's no tie between these two, but they're always talked about in the same breath. And that's solely because of the geography and the fact that they happened in 1966 and then 1967, which is also the time when the Men in Black start showing up in and around West Virginia as a whole, by the way. It's not
right.
tied solely to Point Pleasant. It's the entire state of West Virginia is kind of being engulfed in this wave of weirdness.
Yeah. Well, according to Keel, 2 weeks after the first Indrid Cold experience, you had a classic case of two men in black showing up in mineral wells. And Woody did not know about this until much later. But they were going door to door as if they were selling stuff and asking questions about, do you know about Woody Derenberger? Have you heard anything about, you know, strange about him? So within 2 weeks, you have a classic MIB thing going on in his own hometown. Mm-hmm. Another thing that I wanted to mention that I had forgotten completely.
And I said that about the geography. I should probably mention, like, Mineral Wells in relation to Point Pleasant is close. Like, as the crow flies, you're 30 miles maybe. Mm-hmm. Like, it can't be very far at all.
So, like, north to south would be Parkersburg, Mineral Wells, Point Pleasant.
Yeah. And you got to head over to the river. And that's what I'm saying. Like, as the crow flies, it might be less than that. The unfortunate thing about Point Pleasant is it isn't close to any major highways. Mm-hmm. You take a lot of back roads.
But yeah.
I didn't mean to cut you
no,
off.
No. So the thing that this really caught my attention is that evidently the family was invited to Cape Kennedy. Did Tanya say anything about that to you? Okay. With the whole family, they spent a week down at Cape Kennedy. By day, they would tour.
Which would be where NASA.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. By day, they'd tour the rocket launching facility and stuff. But every evening, he was taken to a room where he was questioned for hours. And they wanted to know everything about Indrid Cold, everything that he had seen. One questioner identified himself as the head of NASA. But by the end of the week, they showed Woody a star map, pointed to a spot, and said, that's where they're from. And they had, you know, Woody had souvenirs that he displayed that proved that he had been, at least it proved that he had been to Cape Kennedy. Mm-hmm. And so I thought that just adds another layer the thing.
I had the book here. I need to read this book.
So, I mean, the next thing that he did essentially was write the book, Visitors from Lanulos. And he moved several times in 1967. Always there were phone calls. Always there were Men in Black type mm-hmm. visits, no matter where he went. He couldn't shake that for some reason. And so it was in March of 67 that the classic ship landed on the farm and Woody started talking about taking these excursions.
Trips, yeah.
First one to Brazil and back, and then, you know, later going to Lanulos itself. Multiple meetings with other beings with names like Kemi, Clinel, Ardo, and Cletaw, mm-hmm. which Keel said was fairly unique, because in other contactee cases, the names ended up sounding a lot like Greek gods and goddesses, whether that was, you know, subconsciously something mm-hmm. or really the case. But Keel was of the opinion that these names were fairly unique, and he didn't make much more about it than that. But I think it's worth pointing out, too, that Woody never claimed psychic powers or anything like that. I mean, he said he felt that the messages were coming
that kind of brings up a point we need to make anyway.
Yeah.
And that's that in a lot of ways, he is considered sort of one of the OG contactee people. Not, I guess, in the sort of classic sense of what we consider like a contactee. Where they're having frequent interaction with these people and they're being taken up in a ship. But where he stands apart from typical contactees is and this continues today, and it extends to contactees who claim frequent contact with, like, Bigfoot. He never tried to make himself out to be the star of the show here. It was sort of like this was a thing that was happening to him. He didn't even necessarily want it to be happening to him. It was happening. That's just the way it is. It's not because he is somehow the key to, and by the way, I'm not bagging on Keel, but Keel would eventually sort of put himself in that same camp when he started claiming to be receiving prophecies and be the, you know, like the guy that knew about all these events that were going to transpire. That's not something that ever really happened with Derenberger. He was just a guy who weird stuff was happening to. And it wasn't because he was special or he was the key to mankind's survival or any of that. He was just a guy who weird things were happening to. And he maintained that same sort of attitude, I think, all the way up until his death. If I'm not mistaken, I mean, you might contradict me, but...
No, and it's interesting you say that, too, because I think that's the point at which the book, The Mothman Prophecies, I think, creeps a lot of people out, and me included the first time I read it, is it starts out in sort of this, you know, somewhat objective, just telling here's what happened, and then at a certain point it turns into the investigator, Keel, in this case, becomes the story, deeply involved in it, to the point that he knows, I mean, he claims that he knew something was going to happen in a disastrous way. And I think that's what, after you read that, you leave it with a really weird feeling. But you're right. I think Derenberger doesn't have a number of sort of the classic markers of contactee, you know, beginning with the fact that he didn't claim any psychic power, or, you know, he never positioned himself as someone who was even looking for these things to happen to him. They just started happening. Mm-hmm. And the final really weird story out of Mothman Prophecies is that Keel claims that Woody did go on a couple shows in New York City. Like, he was interviewed the radio and things like that.
I mean, he was interviewed on a show, a sit-down show. It was a local show, but the Parkersburg interview was 2 days after everything happened.
Yeah, yeah. So he was in
New
York.
He was not averse to publicity.
Right.
Yeah.
So he was in New York on a radio show, and a guy named Tom heard him on the radio, and... as it turned out, Tom was having his own Lanulose experiences, which he thought was... I mean, he heard Woody on the radio, and he just could not believe it, because he hadn't told anybody that he was having these things. And so from a series of coincidences, Keel was able to introduce the two of them. And Keel asked this Tom guy if it was okay to write about him, and he did in a very obscure way, but he still got an angry letter from Tom. He didn't like the fact that he had sort of been outed as a contactee. The major difference is that Tom wasn't being contacted by an Indrid Cold. He claimed that he was being contacted by a figure named Vadig, V-A-D-I-G, but he was from Lanulos, and many of the other things lined up very, very neatly with what Derenberger was experiencing. So that seemed to be a confirming thing, at least for Keel.
It's worth mentioning the underreported first encounter with Indrid Cold took place in Elizabeth, New Jersey, October 11th, one day after my birthday, 1966. So the same year that Cold had the run-in with Derenberger. This is a very different type of story, though. There were two boys walking around Elizabeth, New Jersey. They had heard stories about a strange green man chasing a woman earlier that evening. And they found themselves walking along the New Jersey Turnpike. Between the boys and the turnpike was a steep 30-foot slant that went from the turnpike to the road, as well as a tall wire fence, which was placed alongside the boys' road. Interestingly, they had heard, it goes into all that. Eventually, the two boys encountered a strange man standing in the bushes on the opposite side of the fence, staring at a nearby house. He was described as the strangest guy we've ever seen. He was standing behind that fence. I don't know how he got there. He was the biggest man I've ever seen. The story was reported by Keel, by the way. So it's a John Keel story. Jimmy nudged me and said, "Who's that guy standing behind you?" I looked around, and there he was behind that fence, just standing there. He pivoted around and looked at us. Then he grinned a big old grin. The entity noticed the two boys. They immediately ran home before giving it the chance to climb over the fence and give chase. Others around the area claimed to have encounters as well. There was also a UFO that was sighted 40 miles north of Elizabeth by a police officer and his wife, who described the UFO as being an extremely bright light that eventually disappeared behind some hills. However, on the other side of the hill, two police officers, patrolman Edward Wester and Sergeant Benjamin Thompson, both reported seeing the same UFO. So three police officers claimed to have seen the UFO. And then about 1 month later, Darren Berger has his meeting with Indrid Cold. And of course, Cold has kind of passed over into mythology, becoming known as the Grinning Man. And that just the second you say the Grinning Man, there's an image in your head that's basically those Buffy the Vampire Slayer characters, the silent ones. And that isn't really, if you talk to Darren Berger's family or you hear Darren Berger's account of who he met that night, it's not that. It's not this scary, sort of terrifying alien grin. It's a man who was trying to appear normal by grinning. But yeah, it's a good story. I love the story. Wrap us up.
Well, there is there's a quote from Keel, from an author named John Mitchell, and this is, well, first the quote. He says that ley lines or old alignments have names like red, white, black, Dodd, Mary, coal, and cold. And so that's one point of connection that Keel makes in Mothman Prophecies is that, you know, this is probably stretching it a little bit, but that the first encounter between Cold and Darren Berger, you know, certainly took place on a thoroughfare, and it may have taken place near a crossroads. And there's tons of folkloric elements to that. But the figure of Indrid Cold really seems to fail, you know, it falls so perfectly into Keel's wheelhouse of not explanation, but his whole theory about what you might call a unified theory of everything, where for him it was a matter of, you know, these extra or ultra terrestrials who really don't have an agenda beyond messing with human beings and making us think that we're nuts. And for reasons all their own, zero in on individuals and families and do things to them to provoke them and see how much they can stand before they crack. And that has some explanatory power, at least in terms of what happened to the Darren Berger family.
Monsteropolis is proudly presented on Wadsworth Community Radio 97.1 FM or streaming live at wadsworthcommunityradio.com and is proudly underwritten by Thurber's Jewelers on the Square in downtown Wadsworth.